There's a wonderful documentary which used to be on Netflix. I'm not sure if it's still there anymore, but which I really, really like. And it's titled Happy. It's about 90 minutes of sharing stories from people who are all talking about a simple question. What makes them happy? And one of the people in this documentary that I just really love is a former vice president of a bank centered in Amsterdam. And this man goes through his story a little bit of how for 25 years he worked his buns off. He was promoted to upper levels of bank management with, of course, a terrific salary. And he explains in the film how much he loved blowing his income on sports cars and on fashion, but felt incredibly empty inside, almost constantly. And this emptiness kind of dwelled in him for years. And finally, he was invited by a friend to come down to Calcutta and to just take some time and do some volunteering at Mother Teresa's home for the dying and destitute. So he gets on a plane and he goes down to India. And while serving food there, he met a young boy who was very, very sick and couldn't talk, but who only could stare into this man's eyes. This former banker was the last person this boy saw before he died hours later. And so this man states in this documentary, quite simply, that was it. He quit his job, sold his lavish Amsterdam lifestyle, and moved to Calcutta, where he has been volunteering with the Home for the Dying ever since. I'm sure this story isn't the only one that you've heard of describing some person radically changing things up, going somewhere new, shifting life perspective. And for many of these stories, I find myself continually fascinated by the hunger or the emptiness that leads someone to randomly get on a plane and move to Calcutta. What is that hunger? You know, the Gospel of Mark is probably one of my favorite Gospels. I have many favorites, but the Gospel of Mark is up there. In many ways, I think because this Gospel is about 30% shorter than the other Gospel texts, Mark has a knack of writing style that, as one of my seminary professors always said, he cuts out the BS. There is no recitation of Jewish law and custom that seems to go on and on in the Gospel of Matthew. Jesus doesn't sometimes speak like some privileged Roman mucky-muck like he does sometime in the Gospel of Luke. Nor does Christ seem like this levitating, non-human-like figure sometimes in the fascinating but frustratingly poetic language of John. The Gospel of Mark, I think, is refreshingly short and to the point. No messing around. Well, maybe this is why when Mark makes an embellishment happen in the story of Jesus, one tends to notice maybe a little bit more. Now, maybe it's just me, but Mark's recollection of this story, especially if you look at your text in verse 5, is a little fascinating, if not a little confounding to me. It goes like this: and people from the whole Judean countryside and all the people of Jerusalem were going out to him and were baptized him in the river Jordan, confessing their sins. This is the John the Baptist we're talking about here. All the people of Jerusalem and the entire Judean countryside were going out to see John the Baptist. Really? That's ridiculous. The population of Jerusalem during this time period, most biblical historians think, was between 40 and 70,000, maybe, about the size of Missoula. So you mean to tell me that all of Missoula packed their bags and picnic baskets and hiked a day's journey into the wilderness to be baptized by a guy who wears animal pelts and eats bugs? Now, I'm not going into get into the argument on whether Mark's account of this event is literally and factually true. I have no idea. But in my mind, that seems irrelevant. Mark is making a point here. Something is moving in these people. Something is filling these people. So what is it? Well, on the outside, the people of Jerusalem seem to have it pretty nice. The Second Temple, as it's known, one of the, if not the largest structure known in the ancient world, was lavishly rebuilt with the help of the Roman Empire. People were safe traveling to Jerusalem to offer sacrifices. The priests and scribes have plenty of resources to teach and pass on the faith. Yet something was missing. Lori Franklin, a dear, dear friend of mine and a rabbinic leader at Har Shalom Synagogue in Missoula, whom I deeply respect, just dropped into our text study of Lutheran pastors this last week. And she was there for another meeting, but she kind of came early and just started talking with us. And how often do you get a Jewish rabbi coming and being with you at text study? And she gave this fascinating take on why the Roman Empire finally destroyed Jerusalem at the very end and made the temple after Christ was around literally rubble. You know, Christians have this kind of idea, especially mainline Christians, that Rome was destroyed, or Rome destroyed Jerusalem out of kind of this political calculation. There were too many zealots and revolutionaries. And so Rome, being threatened with its grip on power, had to destroy the city. But Lori described a Jewish understanding that I think goes much, much deeper than that. A Jewish understanding of why the Second Temple was destroyed, Lori described, has much more to do with the Tower of Babel story, if any of you are familiar from that, from Genesis, and much less to do with the politics of the day. Judaism had become so lost, she talks about, so lost in its rituals that it just kind of became an empty act that didn't ground anyone. And it was this emptiness that caused the Jewish people not really to care as much, and to begin infighting, to talking different languages, and not trusting one another, similar to the Tower of Babel story, which eventually led to their demise. So in other words, despite the fact that the Jewish people had this huge, beautiful temple, which was God's house to offer sacrifices, there was something missing. The biggest thing Judaism can still learn, Lori told us, was from the destruction of the Second Temple is not historical political motivations of ancient Rome, but how to link your faith and your heart together. If faith doesn't mean anything in one's life, then it's just an empty gilded temple. Maybe this is what made John the Baptist so, forgive the pun, revolutionary. He wasn't about a lavish temple or large sacrifices or keeping the priests paid. He was calling Judaism back into the wilderness to discover once again their roots, their identity, maybe even in some ways their faith. I think this is the Gospel of Mark's point. All of Jerusalem and the entire countryside were drawn to John the Baptist because he was reminding them what matters. There has to be something more to faith than just empty motions. He filled them with a way of seeing God that brought them life and hope again. Prepare the way of the Lord. Make his path straight. He brought ancient Israel into seeing the boy in Calcutta. That was it. It changed. So what moves us to take the journey into the wilderness? What matters and fills you in your faith? You know, it may come as no surprise to you that I have been having a few baby dreams lately. And most I can't really remember. But on Thursday night, that changed. It seemed like the entire night I was dreaming of taking care of this baby. I fed it. I played with it. I even remember I brought it here to church, whatever that means. And I remember it feeling so real that when I woke up, I could almost smell the fragrance of the new baby. It was that impactful for me. It was really crazy to be witness to this kind of bridge, a bridge between this dream spirit world and reality. Now, I remember it just influenced my whole day. I couldn't stop smiling. I couldn't stop being excited. I was in a different place. It's so funny because I can't tell you how many times before this dream I have been thinking of the baby coming to Abby and I. I can't tell you how many baby Christmas ads Abby and I have been subject to. I can't tell you enough of the incredible generosity of folks who are already giving us things for future baby Huseth. And all of this is amazing. But it was this dream that filled something in me, that brought me into a new state of awareness that other things just couldn't. The gospel of Jesus Christ at its best, I believe, is that dream that beautifully connects our reality with something greater. It is in this connection that can move us in waves that we never thought possible. For when the gospel becomes that bridge or that hook, moving to Calcutta to serve the dying doesn't seem all that crazy. Or going out into the desert and having your head dunked in a river by some guy wearing animal pelts and eating bugs doesn't seem all that crazy anymore. And so, may the gospel of Jesus Christ be alive in your life. May it bridge your reality with something deeper. May it fill you with a new life you never thought to be possible. And may it ground you and your actions, especially this Advent and Christmas seasons, in some radical ways. Amen.